We are here on the first Sunday of Lent. If you're not familiar with Lent, if you didn't grow up with a Lent tradition, Lent is a 40-day journey to the cross. Why 40 days? Well, the children of Israel wandered in the desert for 40 years. Jesus was tempted in the wilderness for 40 days. It's one of those Bible numbers, but it's an extended period of time. And so 40 days of preparation for the cross. Now, if you go to your calendars and you do the math, you go, wait a second, it's more than 40 days, Mike. Well, it's 40 days plus the Sundays. Because in church tradition, celebration happens every Sunday. In church tradition, it's Easter Sunday every Sunday. So it's 40 days plus those 6 Sundays. So, we rearrange our church for those 40 days, plus the 6, where we are all focused on the cross. And if you've been part of this church for a while now, you're used to this language. During this season, spend less time focused on the person across from you and more time focused on the person on the cross. That's what we're doing. And so during this series, through Lent, Lent that started on Wednesday with Ash Wednesday and is growing towards Easter, we're going to be in the book of Mark. Each week, and if you've been doing the reading starting back in January, then this week you're going to be in chapter 10. So guess where the sermon is this morning? Chapter 10. Next week it's going to be chapter, you know, well done. We can count in this church. Now, this morning, we're going to be focusing mostly on the last portion of chapter 10, verses 46 to 52. But before we dive in there, we got to put it in a little bit of a context. To get the context, you go earlier in chapter 10, this is what it says. They, Jesus and his followers, were on their way up to Jerusalem with Jesus leading the way. And the disciples were astonished while those who followed were afraid. You might be wondering why? Because they know nothing good's going to happen in Jerusalem. Again, he took the 12 aside and told them what was going to happen to him. We're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death, and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit on him, flog him, and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise. It's that last part that they seem to forget really quickly. They clue on that first part. Wait a second. We're on our way to Jerusalem, and this is what's going to happen? We're not excited about this. But in chapter 10, you get this shift in the gospel where they go, okay, Jesus is heading to Jerusalem for the last time. So that takes us back to the part we're actually going to pay attention to this morning. So here it is. Then they, Jesus and his followers, came to Jericho as Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city. A blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. Okay. I am a fan of murder mystery or crime mystery TV shows and movies. I like them. And if you like that genre of movie or TV show, then you know how just about every episode goes. There is a crime of some kind. The police that first come to the scene look at the scene and make a quick determination about what happened. Case closed. But in the show, there's always that one detective. And that detective in the show always goes, not so fast. There's more at this scene than originally meets the eye. And then the rest of the show is that detective finding out all the little details that kind of blows up the case. That's how I feel about what I just read. At first glance, if you're the first officers on the scene in this movie, okay, a blind guy is healed by Jesus. You wouldn't be wrong. A blind person was healed by Jesus, revealing the divine power of God made evident in Jesus Christ. And if that's all that you noticed in the scene, well, you wouldn't be wrong, but there's more to this scene than meets the eye. And so here's what's going to happen this morning. I'm going to deputize all of you as detectives. So raise your right hand. I state your name. I knew someone would do that. Yes. Do solemnly swear to be a good detective and see what's really going on in this scene. Amen. All right. So we're going to dive back into this because there's a whole lot more in this scene and we all need to be detectives. Don't be those first policemen on the job and just go, oh, that's all that happened. Go deeper. Ask other questions. So then they came to Jericho. This should have caught your attention because this is pointing back to the other thing I read earlier in the middle of chapter 10. Jesus is on his way somewhere else. His destination isn't Jericho. His destination is Jerusalem. This is a stop along the way. And nothing will ultimately deter Jesus from going all the way to Jerusalem and doing everything in Jerusalem. Yes, a blind man is healed in this story, but Jesus keeps going because he goes to Jerusalem to make sure that everyone is healed. A blind man, Bartimaeus. How interesting is this? Mark names him. And if you say, so what? Then I'm taking away your deputy badge now. This is a big deal that Bartimaeus is named. Here's my proof for this. In the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, there are about 30-ish healings where Jesus heals an individual. Of those 30-plus individuals, only 2.5 are given a name. Lazarus, Jairus' daughter, there's the half. We don't get her name. And Bartimaeus. The fact that Mark includes the name Bartimaeus is significant. Mark is saying something here. The question is, and as good detectives, what's significant about the inclusion of Bartimaeus' name? One author I was reading recently said, a lot of ink has been spilled over this question. Lots of theories as to why Mark includes Bartimaeus' name. Here's one theory. At the time that Mark writes his gospel, Bartimaeus is around. Bartimaeus is part of the community around Mark. And so if people go, hey, is this really true? They could go, ask Bartimaeus, he's right there. So one theory is that Bartimaeus' name is included because he is a living testimony. Other people have different theories, and they like to look at the name itself. And the name Bartimaeus is kind of a funky name. It's a funky name because it includes multiple languages in the name. It has both Aramaic and it has Greek. Mark, when he wrote his account of the life and ministry of Jesus, his intended audience was a Gentile audience. And so 8 different times in the Gospel of Mark, when Mark uses Aramaic or Hebrew terminology, he will point out to his audience, which is unfamiliar with it, what it means. So he says, Bartimaeus, which means, because his Greek audience is going to go, I don't know what that means, which means son of Timaeus. Again, you might be going, well, why is that important? We'll go back to theory number one. Maybe Bartimaeus' dad is still around. Maybe Bartimaeus' dad is the living witness. So if people go, wait a second, did this really happen? Well, go talk to Timaeus. It's his boy. That's a theory. Other people go, no, Mike, that there's more to the name itself. Because the name in the language has some significance. For instance, try this one on. Aramaic, bar, means son. Timaeus means honorable. So maybe what is happening here is Mark's going, see this person? He's honorable. There's something worthy about this person. Other people argue that no, the name Bartimaeus actually has Hebrew in its roots. And try this one on for an exact opposite theory. The Hebrew word for unclean is found in the word Bartimaeus. So what is it? Is this Bartimaeus guy an unclean individual or is he an honorable individual? One scholar said this, and I love it. I like to combine these ideas. Bartimaeus, a down and out blind man, a poor person who begs for money, might be dishonored and marginalized by Greeks. He might be unclean to ritually clean Jews. But in Mark's telling, he is a person we should honor. This broken man, this unclean man, this flawed individual is worthy of attention. There's something beautiful about the man that you tend to overlook. Jesus gives attention to people the world likes to overlook. He gives attention to people that we tend to overlook. But then at the same time, he gives attention to us. Even in our worst, even at our worst, in our worst place, he gives attention to you and he gives attention to me. Jesus never forgets the Imago Dei. Imago Dei is a Latin phrase, it means the image of God. The idea every individual is created in the image of God. And Jesus is the only one that never forgets that. Years ago, I had a group of students with me. And we were in the Pioneer Square section of Seattle. If you've never been to Seattle, Pioneer Square, downtown, a lot of homeless individuals in Pioneer Square. And I just had a group of students with me, and we were spending time. We were giving out some lunches, but more importantly, we were just hanging out with people and talking with people and learning their stories. And we spent hours down in Pioneer Square. Well, we finished what we were doing there, and then I told all the students, hey, come with me. And we walked about 4 blocks until we were on the steps of the Seattle Art Museum. And all the kids were sitting on the steps going, why are we here? And I said, inside those walls is a traveling exhibit of some of the works of Michelangelo. The works of Michelangelo are described as priceless works of art. But there's not a single thing inside those walls as valuable as the people that you just spent time with. How quickly do we forget the Imago Dei? That every individual we come in contact with is created in the image of God and is of great worth. Bartimaeus. Here's another theory, and this one. If Timaeus sounds vaguely familiar, you might be channeling your college introduction to philosophy class. Timaeus is the title of Plato's most famous dialogue and the name of its narrator. In the Timaeus and elsewhere, Plato famously contrasts seeing the mere physical world while being blind to eternal truths. Oh. Could it be that one of the things Mark is doing here is contrasting Greek philosophy with a worldview created by the Messiah? What does Bartimaeus end up saying? He goes, I want to see. It would be fair to say that every person in this room, myself included, suffers from some blindness. And our blindness is often the result of the worldview that we have adapted. The worldview that our culture has created and that we have taken on. And as a result, we do not see clearly. So maybe the inclusion of the name Bartimaeus is calling us all out. You're blind because you have allowed a worldview, whether it's your economic policy, your political stance, you have allowed a worldview created by our culture to develop blind spots in the worldview you were meant to have. You can have Jesus or you can have Timaeus. So you might be wondering, okay, Mike, what is it? Which theory is the right one? You ready? I have no idea. None. I have no idea which one of those theories is the right one. But I can say with great confidence that every one of the theories, whether they're correct or not, point to a truth that we should be paying attention to. Was an individual that was physically blind miraculously healed by Jesus? Yes. Did he have a name? Yes. Was he worthy of our attention? Yes. Does he bear witness to the fact that Jesus transforms? Yes. Did he have a dad? Yes. Was he somebody worth paying attention to? And was he somebody that was broken? Yes. Did Jesus pay attention to him? Yes. Does Jesus call us to do the same? Yes. Have we allowed other things in our culture to give us blind spots in our worldview? Yes. I don't know which of the theories is true, but all of them point to something that is true. Oh, but there's more in this scene. He shouted all the more. When I first read this, I read this the way most of us tend to read it. Because when you read it, you usually read it silently in your head. There's not a lot of shouting. Have you paid attention to the punctuation? Let me tell you what didn't happen. Jesus and his crew are coming through town, and there's Bartimaeus. And Bartimaeus went, psst, excuse me, Jesus. And then the disciples go, hey, shut it. My bad. I was just hoping that maybe Jesus. That's not what happened. If you have hearing aids, the volume's about to change in the service. So I'm just giving you warning. Let me tell you what this more than likely look like. Jesus! Jesus! Son of David! Son of David! Jesus! And they go, shut up! And he goes, no! Jesus, 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 Jesus. Have you ever been around a little kid that's losing his mind? You know, Jeffrey, you know, just losing his mind. It's like that kid's being so annoying. Mommy, 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 mommy. You better on that kid? They go, hey, blind beggar guy, shut it. And he goes, no, Jesus. Jesus, son of David, Jesus, son of David. When he said son of David, he just proved something, by the way, that he sees more clearly than most of the other people. To claim Jesus as the son of David is to acknowledge that Jesus is the Messiah, the one who's come to set everything right. He sees this. A lot of the other people don't. Blind guy sees. Go figure. Timaeus. But there is a desperation in Bartimaeus. There's a desperation, and I began wondering this past week, is there any desperation in our discipleship? Or has following Jesus become just one more thing in the buffet of the American dream? I mean, let's face it, we really don't need Jesus. We're doing fine just by ourselves. What I got is mine because I earned it. Oh, God, I appreciate Jesus. He brings me some of the extra stuff. But when it gets down to it, I have everything I need because I'm good enough. This is how we live our lives. And Jesus is just, he's extra. He's just one more thing in the buffet line. There's not a desperation in our discipleship. There's not a, I need Jesus at the center of everything because nothing in my life will be what it's supposed to be without Jesus at the very center of it. But we don't live that way. There's not a desperation in our discipleship. I recently read the lyrics of a song by Matt Maher, and Lord, I come, I confess, bowing here, I find my rest. Without you, I fall apart. You're the one that guides my heart. Lord, I need you. Oh, I need you. Every hour, I need you. My one defense, my righteousness, oh God, how I need you. Where sin runs deep, your grace is more. Where grace is found is where you are. And where you are, Lord, I am free. Holiness is Christ in me. So teach my song to rise to you when temptation comes my way. And when I cannot stand, I'll fall on you. Jesus, you're my hope and stay. Lord, I need you. I need you. Every hour I need you. My one defense, my righteousness, oh God, how I need you. Is there a desperation in your discipleship? I was praying this morning, and as I was praying, I said, God, I hesitate to pray that you would make me more desperate. And when I said that out loud to Jesus, it revealed something in my heart. I don't want to have to depend on you. I'd rather depend on me. Is there a desperation in our discipleship? Cheer up. On your feet. He's calling you. Every time I read this, I get ticked off. I just want to grab the disciples, just smack them upside the head a little bit. Like, seriously, you guys? Because just moments earlier, they're telling the guy to shut it. And then Jesus says, no, call that guy over to me. And they go from shut up to come on down. We're glad you're here, buddy. Cheer up. Cheerio, yeah. It's totally, really, you guys? Here they are. They're with Bartimaeus. They go, hey, Bartimaeus, you're doing it wrong. Come on, Come on, come on, come on, come on. Come on. You're not supposed to be there, Bartimaeus. You're supposed to be over with Jesus. And Bartimaeus is like, I know. That's what I've been saying the whole time. It's not Bartimaeus who needs an attitude change. It's the disciples. The disciples need the attitude change. The disciples were the ones that initially failed to see the worth in the blind beggar. It's the disciples that did not see the Imago Dei in the blind beggar. They did not see the image of God in the blind beggar. How about us? Who are the people that we quickly conclude are not worth our time, attention, generosity, and grace? The poor, the immigrant, the refugee, the prisoner, the person whose story is not like ours. Jesus sees all of those as people of great worth. Are we like the disciples? Maybe we need the disciples. We need to have happen to us what happened to the disciples. We need to get rebuked by Jesus. No. The opinions you have created regarding that person are wrong. Because you're not seeing that person as I see that person. Throwing his cloak aside. I don't know about you when you first read this or heard it read, saw that line, throwing his cloak aside, and just went, whoa. Do you have any idea the importance of Bartimaeus' cloak? It's all he had. The cloak for Bartimaeus would have been his security from the elements, his protection. It would have been his comfort. It quite possibly could have been his means for collecting money. So if he's a blind beggar and people are tossing coins towards him just out on the dirt, how's he going to find it? Maybe you've seen somebody asking for a handout and they'll have something in front of them for you to put it on. His cloak, his way of collecting the money so that he could physically survive was his cloak. And he leaves it behind. And it's really important to notice this. He leaves it behind before he's healed. He leaves it behind while he is still blind. If you go backwards in chapter 10 a little bit, you get the story of Jesus and the rich young man. Rich young man comes to Jesus, says, Rabbi, teacher, what must I do to get eternal life? Jesus says, obey the commandments. To which he says, been doing that my whole life. Jesus is like, well, good for you. One more thing. Sell all you have, give it to the poor, and then come follow me. At which point, that young man turned and walked away. The rich young man did not understand what missionary and martyr Jim Elliot would say in the 20th century. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. The rich young man did not understand what Bartimaeus would understand, that his only hope was Jesus. And I will give up everything to follow Jesus, even before he was healed. He threw his cloak aside. John Bertinek writes, by leaving it, his cloak behind, Bartimaeus teaches us that our only sufficiency should be Jesus. Our only sufficiency should be Jesus. Over the years, I've taken people to camps. I've gone to camps almost every summer of my life. My dad was a director at a camp when I was a little kid. And when I got old enough, I went to camp. And then when I was a youth pastor, I took kids to camp. There's a camp in Northern California called J.H. Ranch. I love this camp because it is built on the principle of perceived risk. The whole place looks like it's going to kill you. It's great. They have some of the best high ropes course stuff I've ever seen. There was one challenge on a high ropes course called the Flying V. Flying V was about 30 feet off the ground, and it was an exercise you did with a partner. So you and your partner climb up to this platform 30 feet off the ground. You got a harness, you clip in to a cable above you. There are two more cables that make a V. See where this is going, all right. You start out and you are face to face with your partner. I'm on one cable, my partner's on the other cable. And you put your hands on one another, all right, and you start walking. Now, initially, it's not that difficult. Your partner's there for you, helps you with your balance a little bit. Nice to have somebody on the journey with you. But you're pretty much doing it on your own. But there comes a point as you get further and further and further apart. You come to this point of no return. Everyone up to that point has their rear end sticking way out. Every one of them, they're making sure this is their balance. You never thought about your rear end being a counterbalance, but this is what it is. And so you're this, but the person's getting further and further away. There comes a moment when you have to make a decision. You can keep your rear out, or you can completely sell out into the person across from you. There's your choice. Here's the thing. A lot of people can't do it. They trust in themselves the entire way, occasionally appreciating the person across from them. You can't follow Jesus with your rear end sticking out. But boy, do we try. There comes a moment where we have to decide, am I going to trust in me or trust in him? Bartimaeus made the choice. I'm going to trust in this Jesus because I believe he's the only one that can make every part of my life make sense. The rich young man kept his rear end sticking out and he never made it. I would love to be able to stand before you and go, you should be like me because I'm completely leaning into Jesus all the way. But no, I confess before you there are times that I stick my rear end out. And I'm more dependent upon me than I am on Jesus. How about you? Do you throw your cloak aside? Jesus asked. Jesus gave this person his full attention. Do you dare believe that Jesus gives you his full attention? That you are that important to him? Even with your rear end sticking out, even with your blinded worldview, you're really important to Jesus. He gives you his full attention. And if we think that the cross is an evidence of that, we don't understand the cross. Followed Jesus along the road. It occurred to me this week that Bartimaeus did what Jesus first called the disciples to do. What was the first thing Jesus said to the disciples? Drop your nets. Drop what is your identity. Drop what is your security. Drop what is your provision. And come follow me. What does Bartimaeus do? He throws his net aside. He throws his cloak aside. My only hope is Jesus, he says. And then when he sees, he follows. He follows Jesus. So, detectives, what did you notice in this scene? What was the piece of evidence in this scene that was really important for you? Then they came to Jericho. A blind man named Bartimaeus. He shouted all the more, "Cheer up, on your feet," throwing his cloak aside. Jesus asked and followed Jesus along the road. What'd you notice? Chances are what you notice is what the Holy Spirit wants you to notice today so that you can become Bartimaeus. Would you pray with me, please?